Welcome to The Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth, best-selling author and co-creator of PaleoParents.com, where we focus on real-life solutions for families seeking health.
I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne, New York Times best-selling author and creator of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm passionate about improving scientific literacy around public health topics.
I like hashtags and bone broth.
And I'm just a super nerd.
Hello, listeners. We're back again. How are you, Sarah?
I have sent a book off to the printer.
Dun, da, da.
It's out of my hands. I can't change it now, even if I wanted to. Although I was actually really pleased this time around. I hit that like, oh no, I'm really done with this thing. Like really within about 12 hours of it actually getting uploaded to the printer, was I think like my last couple of books, I like tapped out with a few days left. I was like, nope, I'm done. And this one I was like really highly involved, like right up until the very end. But I think it was sort of testament to how much better of a job I did looking after my own sort of physical and mental health throughout this whole process, which is really impressive when you see how big the book is. One of my favorite things was I got a little like, guess how big the binding is going to be? The spine of the book is going to be. I was like, oh man, 1.8 inches.
That's like an encyclopedia.
Yep, pretty much. So I've been sleeping a lot since it went to print. I've been going to bed. I think the very next day I went to bed, I was like, I'm not going to work tonight. I've got another big project that I have to dive into, but I'm going to take a couple of nights where I don't work after the kids go to bed. And so at like 8:30, I was like, I have no idea what to do with myself. I honestly had zero ideas. I looked at my husband. I said, I think I'm just going to go to bed. I did. And I fell asleep at like 9:15. And it was the most glorious thing I've ever, that probably not ever experienced, but the most glorious thing in quite a while. And that sort of, that started me going, I'm just going to sleep as much as I want to now. It's been good because I do have this other really, really big project that I was hoping to have more time to prepare for, because I was hoping Paleo Principles would go to print at least a week earlier. So now I'm scrambling for another project, but at the same time, I'm like, I can take a few nights to just, you know, go to bed basically when the kids go to bed and sleep 10 hours. And it's been really good for me. So I'm in a good place. I might actually be able to speak coherently during this week's podcast. This is my promise. Not my promise. I don't want to promise, actually. Now that I said that, I feel really uneasy promising coherent talk. But I think the listeners will be able to tell the difference. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I've got a lot to cover, and I'm pretty sure you're familiar with this topic, given your recent post as well. So it should be easy sailing for you. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to talk about what I did last weekend, but we actually just got back this weekend from traveling and did an entire weekend in Staunton, Virginia. The locals pronounce it Stanton, but there's an OU in there. So I don't know if you remember, but Russ, the domestic man, and Brent and Heather from That Paleo Couple, and we did like this bacon cook-off to benefit, I don't even remember what it was. It was probably
Farm to Table Legal Defense Fund.
Yeah, it was probably something like that. But it was like using Polyface pork because that's the local town for Polyface. Mm-hmm. And so we've been there a bunch of times because when we go to Polyface, we'll stop at that town to eat lunch on the way out. And so we knew that there was the place for lunch. Cranberries serves like kombucha on tap, and all of their food is Polyface meat and very gluten-free and vegan friendly. Not necessarily the same things, but you know, they really accommodate all kinds of different things. And then there's also like a grass-fed gelato place in town. And this weekend in particular, so we'd been there a lot of times, so we liked the town, but this weekend they turned the entire town into what they called Queen City's Potter Party or Mischief and Magic. And so it's like a, you know, non-trademarked Harry Potter party, essentially. And it was so much fun and amazing. We had like zero plans. We literally just hung out and spent time together in this great little town for the weekend and got to support a whole bunch of local businesses and it just, you know, be a family. Played human wizard chess and all that kind of stuff. So,
that sounds like so much fun.
It was. Mm-hmm. It was much like how you've been relaxing. This is my own kind of recharge, because the weekend before I traveled for what was both a business and a pleasure trip for my birthday, going to the West Coast for a long weekend. And then it's the end of the fiscal year for me, which, you know, we've talked about on the podcast before, is crazy. So, and by crazy, I mean very busy at work. So it was a nice little recharge, and we're back. We just literally walked in the door about 15 minutes ago. So, and we're hosting a like happy hour for work tomorrow, because I just can't stop doing too much. Like, what is wrong with us type A personalities?
I don't know. I was just thinking that. I was like, what is it about both of us? We both do this. And it's not even like, I joke that I'm not very good at saying no to things, but that's not it at all. I come up with these ideas myself.
This is totally, I came up with this plan.
It's not because, like, someone said, hey, would you like to host this happy hour? Or for me, would you like to do this big filming project? No, I just go, I think a great plan would be, and I'm going to schedule this for... And
worst time possible. Let me look at my calendar. Yep. This one right here. This is good.
Yes.
Yes. That's totally what is happening. But, for me, it is an appreciation for the team at work, because things have been so hectic. And so, it's my thank you. We can push through one more week kind of thing. So it'll be good. And all of that, it's just a bit of chaos to plan it.
So are your kitchen renovations done?
No, no, absolutely not. They haven't even begun, except for I have giant holes in my ceiling with blue painter's tape holding them together in every single room in the downstairs, because they were looking for load-bearing walls. So it's super classy.
Awesome.
But I told everybody at work, I was like, you'll get to see the before and after. It's fine. I mean... that's not what it's about. So,
I mean, it's really in the, like, it's a beautiful kitchen already. Like, I know it's not what you want, but it's like a perfectly acceptable space to host a work function.
Yeah. No, it's not unfunctional. Don't think that it's like a 1940s bug infested mold city. Like, it's perfectly fine kitchen. It's just, it clearly was people who did not cook. So it's like, you know, half of everything that we need. Like, the fridge is way small and the dishwasher is way small and the cooktop is so confusing that it takes three people and the internet to be able to turn it on.
My favorite moment, I have to say, my youngest daughter, because my kids have the week off school this coming week. I know that sounds strange, but they're on what's called an equal calendar. So they get a week off every 6 weeks of school. So they started back July 31st, and we're already at our like week off of school. And my youngest daughter said, can we go to DC again and stay with our friends?
Aww.
And I was like, well, we can't, but this week, but because they're going to have to be in school, but we can definitely come up with another time for that. Turns out she had big plans to play more computer games with Wesley.
Newsflash, that can happen anywhere. To be our house. No, DC is beautiful in the fall. And that was part of why we actually enjoyed driving out about 2 hours to 2.5 hours to Stanton, because this area is just amazing in the fall as the leaves change and the Blue Ridge Mountain in the background. So I would recommend to anyone, if you're thinking about going to the Harry Potter Fest, it's every year. So I would definitely recommend to anybody who's considering going to the Harry Potter Fest next year, definitely worth going. The hotels are not that expensive. You just have to book early before they sell out. And it's totally worth the drive if you're anywhere in a driving distance to go. And yeah, that's all I'll say about that. So jumping into kind of overall topic, and the reason that I wanted to talk about this is because it was inspired by my trip last weekend. So the weekend before last, before, so for you, it was the weekend before last because the time warp. For me, it was last weekend because today's Sunday. But anyway, that weekend, I traveled to California, Santa Barbara to be specific, for a beauty counter event. What was kind of like a business slash personal trip for me because it was like an incentive trip. So it was a lot of, you know, just having nice dinners and being around people, a lot of people in the paleo community. So for me, like Liz Wolf, for example, was there. Cassie Joy. I don't want to list off everybody because then I'll forget. But there were a bunch of people from the community who were there as well. And so it was just a nice kind of getaway. I haven't done a not going somewhere with my family thing in almost 18 months because it was just part of the commitment that I made for us to really kind of spend more time together. But because everything but the flight was taken care of, it seemed silly to not go, especially because it was kind of a spa weekend on my birthday. So I was like, hey, this doesn't sound, shabby at all. So it was a great weekend. I learned a lot. But what was amazing for me is I went on this garden tour at what I understand is America's number one garden, Lotus Land. And we did this tour of Lotus Land, which I thought was just going to be, you know, the tour at Lotus Land. But it turns out that it was co-led by the person who does the normal stuff at Lotus Land and then the head of product development at Beauty Counter. And this is not a Beauty Counter podcast. It just happens to be that this is the knowledge set of this person. And what was amazing to me is he has all of this knowledge about the plants and how they function and they work and how that can be harnessed. And I think one of the phrases that he used during the tour was like, nature has been doing this, you know, research and development for billions of years. And we humans don't need to engineer all of this stuff. We can just learn how to use what nature has already invented. And it was kind of a fascinating perspective for me to kind of have somebody say that, because one of the things that I learned is, you know, when you buy a product, any kind of natural product versus a product that is engineered, you're going to have variances, you know? And so it's difficult for anybody to make a more natural or non-toxic product that has consistency with color, texture, smell, all that kind of stuff, because every crop of plant that you're using is going to have a little bit of variance. And so to think about the complications, but also the inventive and the unique way that nature is providing these products and how we as humans can use them without engineering them, which makes, you know, on one hand, things so much easier and, you know, better for us in most cases. And then on the other hand, more difficult to manufacture and keep, you know, a perfect replication year after year. So I thought it was just fascinating. Like, I posted a video, I think like a week and a half ago on my YouTube channel, which is weird to say. I know you have one. I don't know if you're active on it, but I'm going to try hard to release videos once a week now. But one of the things that I had shared was like this video of him talking about water lilies and how they're like the only plant that can be completely submerged in water and still thrive, that most plants would drowned in some sort of way if they don't have access. And I'm not talking about sea plants like, you know, sea vegetables or whatever. I'm talking about regular plants. It can be completely submerged in water and still thrive. And he was describing like the way that the plant structure is in the stem of the plant and how it is completely structurally different than a plant on land in order to be, like, I guess, strong and at the same time allow the water to kind of like go through or go around without penetrating or soaking it. So, and he was like saying they're trying to figure out, what is it about the plant? Is it like the waxy material in the outside? Is it the structural changes in the inside, like the fibers or whatever, that make it water resistant? Because that can be used in so many natural applications for things like waterproof mascara, which the natural non-toxic beauty community doesn't really have right now. So it's just like blew my mind to be in this amazing garden. And there's like these trees there that they're the only ones in the world. There are only 12 of them in the whole world, and they're there at that garden. I mean, they look like a regular tree to me, but it was fascinating to like hear about how they were invented, how they were named, how they like came to be in this garden, and how the woman who owned the garden had to sell off $1 million worth of jewelry in order to buy these plants. And like, you know, the storytelling of the garden was really great. And so I think they call it grounding, right? Where I just felt really connected to the earth and to nature in general, to be around so much diversity of nature and plants, and to hear how, not just for looking at, but how they apply to our daily lives. And I kind of just wanted to dive into that because I was feeling really inspired and just mind blown from the whole experience. And I know you'd recently been talking about nature in general as well.
Yeah. So I just posted a blog post about the scientific studies looking into the benefits of connection with nature. And this was a topic that I had researched in much more depth for Paleo Principles for the lifestyle section to sort of round things out, because I had done a little bit of research for the Paleo approach, but I really felt like I wanted, there were quite a few topics actually that I covered in the Paleo approach in a sort of surface way that I wanted to do a deep dive into for Paleo Principles. And Nature Time was one of them. And in part, you know, my original motivation for wanting to do that comes from my own, you know, like that same experience that you've had of when I do have the opportunity to be in, you know, a forest or a garden or on the beach, that I find that time extremely rejuvenating. And it's not, you know, I think a lot of people can kind of, I think they can lump connection with nature, you know, if we call this grounding or earthing, they can lump those in with sort of woo-woo science, right? Ideas that are not very well founded, but actually there's some really rigorous, well-controlled scientific studies looking at the benefits of nature. And we can actually see this in some cultures. For example, you know, the Japanese actually, you know, they have these huge forest sort of preserve areas that are designed for people to go and connect with nature and be among the trees to be able to reduce their stress levels and improve their health and sort of come back to their urban environments and be more sort of productive citizens. And so we can see, you know, some sort of westernized industrialized countries taking advantage of some of what we know about the benefits of nature and almost instituting nature as a society as something that's a top priority. And we don't do that. And I think it would be really fun to kind of summarize some of this science by way of maybe emphasizing, first of all, that it's not woo-woo, that it really is a worthwhile time investment to seek out some kind of natural environments during the week. But that also, you know, reframing not just our own individual lives, but sort of the structure of our society, because we're at a time right now where we're spending more time indoors than we ever have in our lives. And when we, even when we're active, we tend to go to a gym, right? Or go to a track. Like we're not even the times in our lives where we could be, you know, going for a hike in the woods, we're not necessarily making those choices. And I think this is, has to do with really not recognizing the separate benefits of being in nature over and above, say, the benefits of being active, right? So if you're active in nature, you get more benefits than just being active. So the research is kind of divided into different subtopics in terms of nature connection. And so going back to some of what the, you know, the Japanese are doing of going and spending time in a forest. There's some studies showing that if you spend several hours in a forest, that it dramatically improves immune function. And for example, natural killer cells, which are a type of immune cell that patrol the body for infected cells and cancerous cells. So if a cell starts turning into cancer, it's this immune cell's job to find it and eliminate it before it can become a problem. The activity of those cells goes up 50% after being in a forest for a few hours.
Wow.
Which is a really impressive immune boost. And for my autoimmune listeners who go, well, hang on, you know, sometimes when we talk about an immune boost, that's not necessarily right. This is different than stimulating the immune system. This is improving immune function. And this is something that would be beneficial across the board. If you were to take 3 days and go camping in the forest, that improvement in immune function actually lasts for at least a week. So you can look at a long weekend, right? Camping trip, that the benefits of that time are going to extend for long after you get back. But that's sort of like, okay, we can't all just go up to the woods every weekend. How about a short period of time? So in a, like the, like how much time is a minimum amount of time to get these effects studies, spending as little as 30 minutes per week in some kind of green space. So this is, can even be like an urban park, right? Some kind of a nice, you know, backyard, right? Some kind of green space can reduce blood pressure, which is a high blood pressure, of course, is a very significant risk for cardiovascular disease and depression by like 10%. So 30 minutes per week can have measurable improvements in our health. So the more we get, obviously we can measure some bigger effects, but we can see measurable, statistically significant effects with fairly minimal time commitment. So that's green. How about blue? You know, for me, I actually feel even more sort of rapidly at peace if I'm sitting on a beach. And I always attribute that to the fact that I grew up blocks from the Pacific Ocean, and the Pacific Ocean was such a major part of my formative years. You know, that's where we would take the dog for a walk along the beach, right? It was just such a big part of my life. But studies actually show that whether you're sitting in a park or on a beach, you can have pretty major improvements to psychological health as measured by total mood disturbance scores, and that it doesn't really matter whether or not it's a green space or an ocean space. It seems to matter mostly that it's nature. And there's probably some reasons for that. Nature tends to be the visual stimulus and the auditory stimulus is not particularly predictable, but it also doesn't grab our attention. So it's sort of very chaotic. It's not patterns, right? It's very stochastic. But at the same time, it doesn't, right, like walking on a city street where you have to watch for cars and you have to pay attention to all of these other things around you. There isn't an alert aspect to being in this time. This might be one of the reasons why being in nature can be very beneficial. And it seems to be even better if we can combine nature time with activity. So, you know, we all know that living an active lifestyle improves our health dramatically. But there's been some interesting studies comparing a sort of 45, 50 minute walk in, you know, on a city streets versus the same amount of walk in on a, you know, a trail. And they control for as much as they can, right? They control for walking speed and elevation, right? Like one's not going uphill, like it's everything's flat, right? They control for both of those things. So really the difference is, right, sights, sounds, smells, really those main senses. And what's interesting is compared to walking in an urban setting, walking in nature has some pretty big impacts on a lot of mental health measures. So things like it decreases anxiety, it reduces rumination, which is that sort of persistent, repeated, negative inward thoughts, right? Where we sort of get stuck in that cycle. It reduces negative mood, so it improves mood. It improves symptoms of depression. It improves cognition, so it actually improves things like memory and performance, like cognitive performance. So you can give people various types of tests, and you can see that they're thinking faster and solving problems faster after spending time walking in nature compared to walking in a city. So in that way, you can separate out the benefits of being in nature versus being somewhere else, and you get these benefits above and beyond what exercise would do if you can exercise in a natural environment. I think one of the big things is it reduces HPA axis activity, and you can measure that in lower blood pressure, reduced cortisol levels, reduced adrenaline levels, and more energy, and reduced fatigue, confusion, and anxiety. So like to me, I mean, that's all of those things. What I hear is quality of life, right? I hear, so immune function, mental performance, mood, energy levels, like these are all things that really impact our enjoyment walking through life. And what's really, I think, exciting is that, you know, going back to the equivalent studies of like how what's our minimum amount of time to get an effect. There was one study that looked at a 15-minute stroll through an urban park. So this is just finding a city park and a 15-minute, not even a brisk walk. And they were able to show lower sympathetic nerve activity. So that is calming of the HPA axis, or, you know, calming the fight or flight response, higher parasympathetic activity, which is, you know, we're calming, we're relaxed. And even the subjective reports were very similar, right? I feel comfortable. I feel relaxed. I feel energetic. I feel full of life. They were also able to show that people felt less anxiety and fewer negative emotions. And the benefits were not weather dependent. So what was really neat about that study was they looked at walks during different seasons and showed that even a 15-minute walk through an urban park in the winter showed the same benefits, which I think is really cool. So then there's some studies that are starting to tease out some more of the mechanisms. And there's also studies that are looking at how to structure nature-based therapies. So nature-based therapies are designed for people with some type of psychological disorders. Recovering from addiction, PTSD, those types of things, and they'll take people with these types of mental health challenges. And what they'll do is they'll take them into a natural environment for an extended period of time. So typically at least several days, right? You could think of this as doing, be kind of like choosing to do a workshop, right? In a natural environment where you're camping and you're doing all kinds of fun survival things, right? Like those types of activities. And then they're often combine a mindfulness practice in with the nature connection time. So they might do deep breathing as they walk, or touching nature, touching a tree, trying to feel connected. So there's nature-based therapies take this science that shows time spent walking or being in nature benefits health, and that tries to structure it in such a way as to maximize the therapeutic value of time spent in nature. And the benefits of nature therapy is really pretty dramatic. So it reduces cortisol levels, it lowers heart rate, it improves mood, it improves cognitive function, it dramatically reduces inflammation and oxidative stress, and improves immune function, and reduces HPA axis, reduces heart rate. So like measurements of these are cardiovascular disease risk factors, mental health measures, and immune function measures. And they're all improving with this amount of time. So it's pretty phenomenal how you can take something that could benefit all of us and like ramp it up to a therapeutic level. Even something like gardening can have some pretty amazing therapeutic benefits. So there's scientific studies that look at people who gardening as a hobby. They tend to have better life satisfaction, stronger senses of community, a better sense of vigor, which is, you know, feeling energetic and full of life, right? Reduced stress and anxiety. They tend to have they tend to be a healthier weight. They tend to have lower levels of depression and overall greater happiness. So just whatever we can do to find time to bring nature into our lives, and studies that start to isolate sights versus sounds versus smells really show that all of them independently benefit us. So there's studies showing that if you look at a picture of a scenic view, so you're looking at hills and the ocean in the background, even that can benefit our health. It can do things like lower blood pressure measurably. There's been some studies that have looked at aromatics from trees as benefiting us. So you could potentially mimic that with some essential oils, for example, although certainly not all essential oils would necessarily create that same sense. There's studies looking at taking people and giving them a headphone of nature sounds versus giving them headphones of city sounds and measuring their blood pressure and their heart rate and measures of stress, and just showing that the nature sounds are very, very calming and reduce things like blood pressure and stress and anxiety, whereas the city sounds do the opposite. So it really looks like every aspect of being out in nature is beneficial to us. And so I think, you know, it's a fascinating, fairly new scientific field. But it does really emphasize how important it is to kind of, I think for a lot of us, we really have to choose. It's not necessarily a natural thing that we get exposed to in our lives, especially if we live in cities or in suburbs, but to take time in our week, right? Like clearly spending 3-4 days out in nature is going to be best, but there's these studies showing that a 15-minute walk in a park can benefit us, or 30 minutes per week in a forest can benefit us. So taking those very minimal goals and incorporating them into our lives, I think the science is really compelling that that's a very valuable thing to do to improve our overall health. And as we've talked about on this podcast many times, one of the things that really resonates for both of us about the Paleo Template is it's not just about food. It's also about the lifestyle inputs to health. And so it's one of the reasons why we talk about sleep and stress management and activity and nature, I think, is a fourth pillar, right, in terms of these lifestyle habits that can help support health. And I think it's something that is easy to put on the back burner, just like so many lifestyle things, that really we could benefit a lot from paying more attention and putting it higher up on our priority lists.
It makes me feel less guilty about glamping instead of camping. I'm getting all these health benefits from just being outside, yeah, close to nature.
Well, and nobody said that you had to sleep on the ground.
Exactly.
To get the benefits of being out in nature. So there's some interesting studies showing that physical connection, so you know, walking barefoot on the beach, for example, or you know, in the woods, provided you know that's safe, can be beneficial as well. One of the things that we didn't have time to get into, and we can do this for a separate podcast if people want, but the idea of earthing and grounding, where you have, right, was like electromagnetic ion flow from the earth to your body, and how, right, this has led into all of these products like grounding mats and grounding shoes. It'd be very, very worthwhile to just emphasize that there is no science to support that aspect of nature. Like the, it seems as though the benefits of nature are not related to ion exchange or any of the other things that you might hear in relation to earthing or grounding. And I do have a post coming down the pipe specifically about sort of debunking that aspect of the benefits of nature. So you know, don't go out and buy crazy shoes and mats that help you connect to the earth better. Just go spend time where earth is natural, and that will give you all of the benefits. So this is a great one because it doesn't cost money, except for maybe parking, right, at a state park or national park. Maybe.
Well, I would just say to be careful where you're going and what you're doing. Cole got a nasty case of chiggers while we were camping because he was running through tall grass and forest to Nerf gun fight with brothers, and definitely went through some sort of nest or something. So, you know, be careful, obviously. Check for ticks. There are, you know, ways to be safe and check yourself and all that kind of stuff.
I awesomely got poison ivy during eclipse day.
But these are not things that, well, I'm not going to say they're not things that won't kill you, because maybe somebody has like a anaphylactic reaction to these things. But for the most part, this is just living, and we all kind of go through the stuff and we learn the lesson to check for poison ivy leaves, or to, you know, be careful where we're treading or things like that. But
yes, and do tick checks, especially if you live somewhere where there's a high percentage of ticks with Lyme. But it really, the benefits are so profound, finding ways. And remember, this can be even tamed nature. So if you, you know, do live in a really high Lyme area and you don't want to go in the woods, you know, go to a horticultural center or to a nice urban park near you where you know that there's not likely to be ticks, but you're still going to get the benefits of nature. So like so much in paleo, this is a, here's the idea. Now figure out how this fits into your life rather than how your life fits into it. So access, budget, other independent risk factors. I mean, all of those things are also factors for each of our individual decisions, right?
Yeah. And I would love to get a copy of, or have you share a link. We'll work with you to get a link to some of the science findings, but particularly one of the ones that you mentioned that was interesting to me was the aromatics that are in nature, because that was one of the things that has always really connected me. Is I think I'm like one of those super tasters, super smellers. Like, I'm just highly sensitive to aromas in general. Like, I'll be the first one to smell that popcorn's burning. And my office is like the opposite end of the kitchen, right? Like, I can just smell it right away. When I'm in nature, I completely pick up on, I think there's a cleanliness of the air that I can detect. And I know that that sounds woo woo, and that's fine. But I definitely feel like it's different when you're surrounded, not just in like an urban park wouldn't do it for me, but like when I go camping or in this very large, you know, 300 acre land, or even if I'm on kind of a secluded type beach area and not like a metro type beach area, I can really smell the salt in the ocean. I can smell all those kinds of things. And I think it's really interesting how I'm curious if the mechanism there is kind of stress related, you know, like if it's a calming effect on, this is a different environment, this is a soothing environment, there's no stress here, there's no whatever, like it calms, or if there's something different about the aromatics that could potentially be harnessed in a, you can take it away, not necessarily a grounding mat, but like, is something like a rosemary oil or a whatever going to offer some of the same benefits. So it's kind of interesting to me.
So I can answer that question a little bit more. This is actually something that I write about in Paleo Principles, but is not actually included in my blog post. So the chemicals that are triggering that response are called, I don't know if I'm actually pronouncing this right, phytoncides. I might not be pronouncing that correctly. I'll have to find a medical dictionary pronunciation helper to figure that out before I read the audiobook for this puppy. But this is a class of aromatic chemicals that plants emit that are airborne. And this is what sort of classically gives the forest their scent. This is what gives, right, the desert has that amazing smell after it rains. So these are all of these chemicals, the smell when it rains, I mean, that's not the same anywhere else as the desert, but it's still an amazing smell everywhere. And there's some interesting studies where they've isolated some of those chemicals. So pinenes, which are from, you guessed it, pine trees, alpha pinene and beta pinene. When people inhale them, it improves immune function. So it improves the activity of those natural killer cells that we talked about at the beginning of this. It reduces cortisol as well. So it's improving immune function and reducing stress. So you would get those in wood essential oils. So I'm not sure if you would get that from rosemary, but if you were to get that from essential oils that are from a tree, you would get certainly those phytoncides, I'm saying them again, potentially incorrectly, that have been scientifically studied. So I think there is some ways that we can bring nature inside. You know, it's interesting. There's some studies showing, for example, if you're in a hospital room that looks out over a garden versus a hospital room that looks out over a parking lot, that you have a better outcome if you're in the hospital room that looks out over a garden. There's some interesting research showing that having houseplants around can at least at a lower level replicate some of the benefits of nature. So I would think that you could do things, for example, like have you know, a vase of flowers or a houseplant or something at your desk, and have you know, some nature sounds going on your there's like a dozen different apps that will do it on your phone, and you could have some wood essential oils going, and you could have your screensaver is a beautiful you know, waterfall, right? Like, and you could, you, I'm sure you can bring the various aspects of this inside. I'm not sure that necessarily replaces that full immersion in nature. But I think there's a lot of little bits and pieces in this information, in this sort of scientific study that, that tells us ways that we could, can potentially bring a sense of nature into our daily lives to have an overall calming effect.
Love it. Well, I am kind of curious about the trees versus others, but the idea of bringing nature in, having a positive effect, is definitely something we can all do pretty easily. So that's exciting.
I find this whole feel, I love, you know, there's so many ideas that we see on the internet, and I tend to find, as I start to research them, they fall into like the one of two categories. Holy smokes, there's some really good science to support this, which, you know, connection with nature, there really is. And then, wow, this is a load of hooey.
which we've covered in the podcast before, but not nearly as often as it comes up.
that is true. So those ideas tend to fall in one of the other of those two categories. And I always find it really interesting when an idea that sounds really crunchy granola actually has really strong science to support it. And that's what time and nature qualifies as. So, I get to geek out, and that's my favorite thing to do.
Well, it was a nice balance of both, allowing your brain to not need to compute too much, but getting into kind of the basics of what the paleo view has been built upon for these many, many years now. It's not often we get to dive into a new topic because we've been doing it so long. But this is definitely interesting, and even if the listeners don't ask, I would like to do the follow-on show. But I would be interested also in looking more into the details of, you know, what oils specifically may or may not be beneficial to people and what the science might say to support it, because it's something I just have had pause on, not knowing where the science supports and, you know, what may be beneficial for us.
It's a very complex topic, and I think we could almost certainly do an overview show. But the thing with essential oils is there's actually a real shortage of scientific studies into the different oils. So most of what you see is like unsubstantiated claims, but there are some oils in which there is some science to support that. So it's like, it's the grain of truth that's sort of taken to really crazy levels. So with essential oils, there are some that have some really interesting properties, and there is some science to support sort of the aromatherapy side of things. And then there's plenty of essential oils in which there's not a single scientific study to evaluate its effects. So I think definitely doing sort of an overview of that, it's the kind of thing to get really, really deep into the science, would take me some time, like a lot of time, like a really, really ton of time.
Yeah, no, it's not something that needs to happen tomorrow. But I know it's something that I would personally be interested in, and I'm sure our listeners would love to talk about the science of it as well. And so it's just one of those areas that, like cleaning products, has been on my list of, I need to figure out kind of the best way to detox and improve that part of my life. And it just has been ongoing as a to-do list for quite a while. And I think part of that is that it just feels so overwhelming on like where to start in terms of what to look into and what to believe when you're looking at source information, right? This is something that we've talked about in the show before. So that would be great. But we know that you're still recovering from submitting your book, for sure.
And jumping into this other crazy big project,
yes,
and recording an audiobook for Paleo Principles.
Yeah, that I can't. That's going to take you 8 years.
I think it's going to take me working on it full time 3 straight weeks.
Wow.
I think now it's going to be an abridged audiobook because the book is 672 pages. And I thought it was
a bit
silly.
No one wants to hear you read recipes.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit silly to read recipes and numbers and tables. But I'm going to, I still have to sit down with my editor virtually and hash out exactly how we're going to do this. But I'm pretty sure the narrative is going to stay intact. And then what's going to, get dropped is sort of like the tables and the recipes, and the rest of it will stay there. But even an abridged audiobook, I wouldn't be surprised if it's like 50 hours long. So,
well, it'll be good educational listening. I personally, Eat the Yolks was one of my like favorite books to read on audio. I loved Liz's recording of that book. So I'm looking forward to a digestible format for me because I cannot read, 600 and some pages of a book. I don't have that time, but I can certainly make
time.
It's a
beach read, really. It's light. It's light. It's
like a little light reading.
It's light reading. I mean, the book's going to weigh like 7 pounds. So yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, listeners, for joining us today. And given that it sounds like Sarah is willing to do a little more research and to follow this up with maybe a couple more shows in our what we can call nature series or natural living series, or who knows? I mean, natural living would be so broad, but who knows what we'll call them. But if you do have specific questions that you would like us to answer on this topic, let us know, and we will do our best to either answer your specific question or a question like it in upcoming shows. If you enjoyed this show, and if you enjoy the show in general, we would love for you to recommend it to your friends or to review and rate it on iTunes and or wherever you're listening. And of course, as always, you can find show notes on our blogs, which you will also find ways to support us on the sidebars of our blogs, because we're not inundating you with obnoxious commercials throughout the podcast. So if you would like to support us so that we can, continue to produce this podcast and host it for you, we would sincerely appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Oh my goodness. Hold on one second. I don't want my burp on.